What shall we say about unlikely missionaries? Hello, welcome to The Good Word. I am David Thomas, your host for this quarter. We have been talking and will continue to talk about Christian missions. And today we are going to be talking about a very unlikely missionary, a little girl whose name we don't know. I'm happy to have as conversation partners Paul Dibdahl and Brant Berglund, two individuals who are good colleagues of mine from the Walla Walla School of Theology. Gentlemen, the story that we are looking at today is set in long ago and far away, 2 Kings chapter 5, the story of Naaman. And Naaman was a dignitary from Syria, I think it was. And he had a little Hebrew girl who was a slave. And I don't know, do one of you want to tell the details of the story quickly?
So Naaman has an illness, leprosy, some sort of skin condition.
And say something about that, because I think everybody, we hear this talk about leprosy being the dreaded disease.
Well, the word in the Old Testament, the Hebrew word, refers to a broad range of physical conditions. So sometimes we read that and we think of the specific disease that we call leprosy today.
Hansen's disease.
That may sometimes be in view, but usually probably we're talking about some other kind of infectious skin disease.
But something that would not heal, right?
That was apparently kind of chronic issue that people had to deal with.
And so why were people ostracized because of that? I mean, that was a common practice, right? If you had one of these diseases that could not be healed, you were dismissed from at least society. Is that not true?
Yeah, the contagion, the fear that it could be passed on. Today we have diseases that we quarantine.
Yeah.
And often given a spiritual kind of interpreted spiritually as well, is that someone who is suffering from this must somehow be not in God's favor. And so a sense of uncleanliness, not just in the sense of physical contagion, but even a sort of spiritual contagion that you would want
so
to
you must
ritually
be
impure.
You must be a bad person, and now some judgments are upon you. So, so it sounds to me then that we should view Naaman as a man who was in a predicament. I mean, he was in serious trouble, socially speaking.
And he's the commander of the army, and to have the commander, you know, unable to function, and maybe he's even lost his reputation.
Dishonored in some way because of his condition, if it was widely known.
And so now in his household is this little girl whose name we don't know, and some of us in some storybooks have known her to be called Little Maid in some children's storybooks that we're acquainted with. But reflect a little bit on what would have made this commander in the army pay any attention to a little slave girl?
My sense is that when we are desperate for a cure, we will we'll seek it wherever we can find it. So I think we all know of people who've done some, you know, they'll invest all of their money. I don't know if invest is the right word to use. They'll spend all of it, and they'll seek out even some sometimes very strange alternative therapies, experimental, whatever. If you really want to be healed, you'll go to great lengths to find that healing.
So you put the willingness of Naaman to listen to this little girl
in his desperation.
And
maybe something else. But
there's also an order of communication. The little girl doesn't speak to Naaman according to the text. She speaks to Naaman's wife.
Oh, okay.
And Naaman's wife. we can talk about the influence.
That's good too, yeah.
Well, no, I that is an interesting point that you make, Brent, that I wonder why the wife listened to the little girl, probably out of desperation too.
Yeah. What does the little girl tell?
It just doesn't tell anything.
Says there is someone back home in my country. That I think could bring healing, prophet of God.
But I wonder if there's already a sense of the stories that have come out of Israel that the God of Israel has done great things. Elijah, the ministry of these prophets. Maybe it's expanded past the borders of Israel.
But I do think about, you know, what you said there, how often adversity causes us to be open to things that we would not otherwise have been open to, you know. Mm-hmm. And so here Naaman, in his sickness, he listens to his wife. That's your point, Brent.
Yeah.
And who picked up this clue from this little girl. And I do like your comment about desperation, Paul, because I can see this woman very concerned about the welfare of her husband, and they have no answer to it. But this little girl keeps saying, well, there's a prophet down in my country. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, Naaman and an entourage, right? They head out and they go down and they find the prophet Elisha. And what happens, gentlemen?
He's given the cure. He's given the the medicine that he needs to take.
The procedure for obtaining a cure.
And it's to wash in the River Jordan seven times, bathing or dunking. We're not sure exactly, but to bathe in the muddy, slippery, slimy.
And do you remember his reaction?
He doesn't want to do it.
Yeah, he's offended, first of all, because the prophet did not come out
right.
in some grand sort of way and meet him. The prophet merely sent word through a servant, this is what you should do. So that kind of wounds his pride. And then he knows the Jordan well enough to know, as Brant said, I don't know what picture listeners may have of the Jordan River. And there are portions that would have some clear water, but much of the Jordan is far from a beautiful river.
Yeah, yeah.
And so he's like, we've got better rivers, you know, back home.
Yeah, we have mountain streams over in Syria. We don't need to come.
I'm not going to lower myself to dipping in muddy water seven times.
And I'm caused to ask you to think about how many benefits do we as human beings miss out on because of prideful reactions or rejections?
In this case, it's a good thing he had good friends who would call him on it and say, look, if you were asked to do some difficult thing, climb some mountain, you would do it.
Yeah. And I also find myself thinking about, I would like to see that conversation where somebody in his retinue, his servant, says to him, now, you know, calm down, Naaman, you know, don't be all offended here. There might be something in this. I one day if we get to see the videotapes of history in heaven, I'd like to watch that little episode. He must have been a very skillful
And it says this a slightly different topic here, but it also says something to me about faith, because the idea is that the servant said to Naaman, look, what do you have to lose? It's not a big deal. Just go dip in the river. You know, there's nothing to lose. I don't think Naaman does this with some great sense of expectation or faith. It's like, well, what do I have to lose? Might as well give it a try. And healing comes to him.
Yeah, yeah.
So sometimes we overemphasize, I think, the role of faith in healing. And
you mean
this
making
story,
it conditional, if I don't get healed, it's because my faith.
That's because I didn't have enough faith. I think here's an example of a man who likely did not have a whole lot of faith.
He almost did it skeptically, to get my servant off my back. Yeah,
well,
I
got
to go home and tell my wife
it.
I at least tried it. Yeah,
yeah, he did it.
Yeah,
he obeyed, and maybe there's a key there for us.
Yeah. And then we see him going into the river and dipping. You know, you can picture him once, twice, and then come down the sixth time, come up the sixth time, and they're still. And then he comes up the seventh time. And I've often wondered what his reaction was to that. Do you think it was of jubilation? Was it of shock and surprise? What do you guys picture in your minds?
A lot of laughter.
Laughter?
Celebrating together.
Yeah, I would think celebration. Maybe a little bit of, what's the word here?
Incredulity.
But when you've kind of made a big deal about something and then it turns out maybe you weren't exactly right.
Eating crow
little. Just a little bit of a kind of, well, but celebration, I think.
And his response, you know, he wants to go back and give gifts to the prophet, as if the prophet had done this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's another whole story too. The story of that. Naaman shows up in Jesus' words, doesn't he?
He does in the book of Luke.
What do you think of that little interchange? That there are many lepers in Israel in the time of Elisha, and none of them was cleansed except Naaman the Syrian. So doesn't he show up as a man of faith then, Paul?
Mm-hmm. Well, and this goes directly, I think, to our theme of mission. Jesus, in recounting this story, I think demonstrates God's interest and his concern, not just in the direct descendants of Abraham, but rather he is interested in all people, whether they're Syrians or Jews or whatever they are.
Yeah.
And Jesus tells this story to remind his audience of that universal concern that God has for the healing of all people.
Yeah, we can't be parochial in the grace of God, see. So do you consider the little maid a missionary?
Sure.
She pointed Naaman to a source that she believed would be a place of healing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess missionaries don't always have to proclaim the gospel as such. They can lend an influence in other ways.
So maybe opening up too big of an issue here right near the end of our time together, but missionaries proclaim salvation, and biblically salvation is a word that means not just a restoration of my relationship with God, but a restoration to wholeness in all areas of life. And that's what Naaman experiences.
Oh, yeah.
Initially, he experiences it physically. But when you've experienced that physically as a gift from God, I think the other elements, the spiritual relational elements with God,
which exactly what happens, because he now becomes a worshiper of the little maid's God.
Exactly.
Doesn't he take some dirt back with him?
Yeah, and it creates an interesting predicament for him when he gets back to his home. Anybody want to reflect on that? Where he goes, he says that, you know, when I go back, I have to go into the temple of my boss's God, and will I be excused for going in there into a worshipful place when I myself am not really worshiping? And I think you said earlier when we were talking, Paul, that what was the response here?
Yeah, it's the Brandt, I think, said the prophet. How exactly did
he says, go in peace. He doesn't say, yes, I'll exempt you while you're there, or no, you shouldn't go in. He just says, go in peace.
Yeah.
Be at peace with the decisions you have to make.
Yeah. So really the inner dimension of spirit is more important than the exterior manifestations of it. Although that's not to suggest that the exterior manifestations are without significance. See?
The obedience that Naaman had to carry out was external.
Yeah. So we have this little story here. It's a kind of a happy little story of this little girl. I wonder if she ever made it back to her own country. I wonder how she became a slave. And yet somehow in her living, she lived with such credibility and innocence that when she did talk about the prophet in her land, that the people, granted they had some desperation, actually took her advice and went down. It would have been fun also to see the return of Naaman, but we leave it for there now for now. So thank you, Paul and Brandt, for your contributions today. My thanks also to David Olson, our engineer. And my thanks to you for listening for Good Word. I'm David Thomas.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.